Today's guest is the amazing Hilary Dorion, and it was such a privilege to have her back on the show to talk with us about bowel nosodes. Now, as more and more information is coming to light about the importance of our bowel flora, and with statistics such as the fact that 80 to 90% of our serotonin is actually made in our gut, not in our brain, I do feel it's important that us as homeopaths are really educating ourselves on this powerful series of remedies that we have called the bowel nosodes. Now, many of you might be already using Polybowel Plus, and that's a great remedy to use, but really getting to know these bowel nosodes individually, I believe, and I know Hilary does too, will really transform your practice and elevate the results that you are getting in your clinic. Now, Hilary is such a brilliant lecturer. I really, really enjoy her classes, and that's why I've done her Master Practitioner course through CHE, and I've done her private lectures that she's done. I've also done the other lectures that she's done through CHE as well. And if you would also like to learn from this incredible master homeopath that we are just so lucky to have in our midst, then be sure to sign up to her newsletter. You can email her at hilarydorion@aol.com. That's hilarydorion@aol.com. And she will be sending out the lectures that you can purchase directly from her. And she also has some plans to evolve this to way more lectures in future, with including expanding upon the bowel nosodes. So be sure that you're on a newsletter so you don't miss out. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now my mum and your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, homies, and a very warm welcome to Homeopathy Hangout. I have got such a treat for you today. The amazing Hilary Dorion is back to come and have a chat with us over 200 episodes later. Welcome to the show, Hilary.
Thank you, Eugenie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, people have to scroll back to episode 53 to listen to your origin story. And then we actually sneaked one in with you, episode 237. It was the matridonal remedies. It was actually a recording from CHE that Marcus said that we could use over our holiday period. So technically, this is your third time on the show.
Good.
I'm so excited that we're talking about a topic that's very close to my heart, the bowel nosodes. And you had this lecture on CHE called Transforming Your Practice with Bowel Nosodes. And that is no overstatement. It's actually understated, because learning about bowel nosodes transformed my practice for maybe 5 years ago. I feel like it was 2019, maybe, that you did that lecture. And I did that through CHE. And it has made such a massive difference in my clinic. It was definitely 2019, because I know it was before I am the clinic that I'm in now. Can you tell us a little bit about the bowel nosodes? And I also just have to tell you that when I open my laptop in the morning, the first thing I do is I open my email, then I open Radar Opus, then I open my bowel nosode lecture notes, and then my endocrine sarcode lecture notes. They're always, nice. Always, because everybody walks away with a bowel nosode and an endocrine sarcode, and then a constitutional remedy, and usually Auckland remedy as well. But tell us a little bit, Hilary, how did you first start using the bowel nosodes? When were you introduced to them?
Well, we were taught them when I was at college, which is nearly 40 years ago now. And immediately, my ears pricked up at them. And I think that sometimes in college, and back then, we really didn't have all the wonderful books and materials that we have now. And teachers sometimes had to teach remedies that they themselves didn't really use or understand. And I think that was the case. Somebody taught them from the books we had available then, and no criticism of them, because the information in them is wonderful, but maybe slightly dry and a little bit inaccessible. And I was left with the feeling that this was a really interesting group of remedies, but I didn't leave with a clear handle on why I would use them particularly, and if I was going to use them, which one I would use. And it took quite a long time before I really made friends with them and really got to know them more than a passing acquaintance. And the first one I ever used was a wonderful case where I used Psychotic Co. after discovering how similar it was to Thuja for a lady who had done brilliantly well on Thuja, but I just couldn't move her the last 20%. And she was saying, well, I'm so much better. I'm glad if this is as good as it gets, it's wonderful. But I was like, no, I'm going to get you there. And I used the Psychotic Co, and it was miraculous. And the reason that we called that lecture Transforming Your Practice with Bowel Nosodes is because, like you, other people have said to me, wow, just wow. You know, it's amazing what they can do. And it is, they're an absolutely wonderful group of remedies. And when I teach them, I start off by teaching why you would use one, to get an idea as to what are the things that bowel nosodes, just what are the things that would make you just flag up using a bowel nosode, for instance, because we might not think of them if we don't know them that well, and they don't repertorize out very well. So we do need to know them. And there's a quote, and it says that if you don't know the rationale behind the bowel nosodes, you won't make best use of them in clinical practice. So that's the first thing I'd like to say, is we need to know when and why. And we'll talk a little bit about that. And then once we've kind of understood that, we need to know which one. You know, five of the big bowel nosodes that I would say that we're using really regularly, and a lot of other smaller bowel nosodes that we might use slightly less regular. So we've got, if you like, the polycrest bowel nosodes and the smaller but still really useful when they are needed bowel nosodes. So the background of it is interesting, because they started off because Dr. Bach was a bacteriologist, and he was a bacteriologist in University Hospital London. And he was always looking at slides of bacteria from people and bowel samples from people who were ill. And he noticed that certain bacteria from the bowel nearly always equated to a particular disease in the patient. He became so good that he could almost with certainty say, I bet this patient's coming in with severe and chronic arthritis, or I bet this patient's coming in with respiratory issues, I bet this patient's coming in with severe skin. He became so good at it that he actually considered looking at making a vaccine out of these particular bacteria that he saw regularly, which were the non-lactose fermenting bowel bacteria. As the universe would beautifully have it, he accepted a post just at that point as a bacteriologist still at the homeopathic hospital. He knew nothing about homeopathy. And there he met all his colleagues, esteemed doctors who were also homeopaths. And he started to get interested in homeopathy and put the theory forward to Dr. Wheeler that maybe these would make interesting remedies. And that's what they did. It was the initial work of Dr. Bach who got these bowel nosodes into being. He left the world of bowel nosodes for the altogether more fragrant world of flower essences, because that is what we know him for. And his work was continued by Dr. Boyd, Dr. Wheeler, and Drs. Patterson. Dr. Boyd was also a bacteriologist, but he was also a homeopath. So he had a particular interest in these remedies. And that's how they came about. And they didn't have provings initially, but we have had well over 100 years of clinical experience with these bowel nosodes to bring up the picture for us. And we have since had a few provings now as well. And I just want to mention, you know, as I said, the old Indian pamphlets, the original pamphlets by Patterson, great information, but we do have more up-to-date literature now that helped to make the bowel nosodes come a bit more alive for us. And I can't talk about the bowel nosodes without mentioning Anthony Bickley. Anthony Bickley has written some fantastic books about the bowel nosodes and is a real expert on the subject. John Saxton has written a fantastic book. It draws on his veterinary practice, but fantastic information. Lou Klein also has written a lot about some of the bowel nosodes. Fantastic writer and lecturer, Lou Klein. We have got some good information out there. What I would like to make clear, which perhaps isn't done so much in these books, is the what might first of all make us think bowel nosode. And so we have in our bodies, cell for cell, 10 bacteria to every human body cell. And most of them living in our gut, not all of them, quite a lot live on our skin and so on, but most of them live in our gut. And this is what we call the microbiome. And the microbiome and our gut health is essential to our overall health. There are so many areas that are influenced by gut health. Modern research has shown that the microbiome is really important, for instance, in the treatment of diabetes. So that having a very disrupted microbiome could lead to type 2 diabetes being far more common. They've now started doing fecal transplants for diabetes. That shows that if we can get the bacteria right in our microbiome, we're going to get much more success with problems like that. They've also started doing fecal transplants for stubbornly, you know, people with obesity who just cannot turn it around. They've shown that people with a very dodgy microbiome are far more likely. Obviously, diet plays a part, and initially the diet plays a part in how good your microbiome is, but that by doing fecal transplants, people find it much, much easier to lose weight. A lot of people have done research on autism and the microbiome, not least Andrew Wakefield, who investigated the effect of the MMR on the gut and therefore on the development of autism. And these remedies, particularly Proteus and particularly Disco, are brilliant for children with autism. There is such a big gut-brain connection. So I always think that the gut and the brain, they look alike when you look at the tissue. They look similar. They both have a blood-brain barrier. They both have racks of neurotransmitters. I always think that our brain is our thinking brain, our rational brain. Sorry, I don't know what's going on my screen. Something strange is happening. Doesn't matter. Are you still there, Eugenie?
Sorry, I've just had a screen share because I love this image. Anybody watching the video?
I thought that was me doing that.
No, me. This image that Hillary has in a lecture of, is this the gut or the brain? And I tell you what, you literally cannot tell. And I'll let our listeners, you know, decide for themselves what they think, and then I'll scroll down and you can kind of, I don't know. Yeah. I think that's the brain,
so,
right?
Look so similar. I was a lecturer in Denmark, and in a room that had medical studies going on, and they had a body with the cavities open. And I was just struck at that point. Oh my God, they are so similar. But that similarity, it seems to me that this brain is our rational thinking brain. And this is our more emotional brain. We talk about, you know, gut reaction. I couldn't stomach it. And when we see children with autism, very often this part of the brain is doing more than well. Certain types of autism in particular, there are gifts with the rational brain and deficits with the emotional brain. So it's about getting that wiring right, getting the communication between the gut and the brain balanced. So helping the gut for sure can help in cases of autism. We also have Alzheimer's, for instance, people with Alzheimer's, it's been absolutely shown beyond a doubt that the microbiome influences the brain. And it does so by the bacterial cells attaching to the afferent neuron on the vagus nerve and traveling to the brain, where it sets up some inflammation and it sets up these kind of tau proteins, which end up in Alzheimer's. There's so many, honestly, we could sit here all day talking about the diseases that we can think of that if we get the microbiome a little bit better, we'll make a huge difference. Fibromyalgia is another one, particularly with Psychotico. I've seen lots of people. In fact, two of my patients that I mentioned in the lectures had colectomies, where one had a partial colonectomy and the other had the whole colon removed. They both developed fibromyalgia not long after, and Psychotico really sorted them out. Fibromyalgia is a very unknown disorder. Nobody really kind of quite understands what's going on there, but people have localized pains, fatigues, very unpleasant thing that doctors really don't understand and don't have very much ammunition to treat. So these are There's so many complaints that we can think about why bowel nosodes might be useful. And then a little bit deeper down, just looking at some of the areas of the body that the bowel nosodes have their main activities in. So as you know from having done the lecture, I like to bring in, my background is also traditional Chinese medicine. I started out my life as an acupuncturist. And the gut, the large intestine, is where most of these bowel nosodes make their home. And the bowel nosodes living in the gut, it's important because the large intestine in Chinese medicine is paired with the lungs. And the lungs and the intestines are thought to be intuckings of skin. So we can see straight away that we're going to see that the bowel nosodes are brilliant for any complaints in the bowel. It could be ulcerative colitis, it could be IBS, it could be chronic constipation. And then straight away, the lungs partner that it shares energy channels with and works to support, we're going to see there will be things like asthma, bronchitis, fibrosis, any lung disorders. Second thing that we should really be thinking, bowel nosode. We see bowel disorders, we see lung disorders, we should be thinking bowel nosode. The skin, it being the third partner in that sharing, having, they're all organs and elimination. And when we see skin disease, eczema, psoriasis, we should be thinking bowel nosode. Those are the first three areas. One more link with that, the sense organ of the lungs that's connected through the relationship between the bowel and the lungs is the nose. So again, sinusitis, polyps, things like that, we should be thinking bowel nosode. On a second level, some of the bacteria make their way into the small intestine. And so we'll see at a slightly lesser level some of those relationships. And those relationships are the heart, particularly with DISCO, big heart remedy, palpitations, heart failures, and so on. And also joints. I mentioned this in my lecture, that people in homeopathy always know the suppression pathway of, if you suppress the skin, it's going to go to the lungs or the bowel. If we suppress eczema, we're maybe going to get asthma, and so on. And less known is that if we suppress the joints, they're going to go to the heart. A very important suppression pathway. And so again, these are areas, small intestine, heart and joints, that at a secondary level should make us think maybe a bowel bacteria might be useful here. So knowing a lot of that information helps us to make the decision. I think I'm looking at a bowel nosode here. I think I might need a bowel nosode for this patient. And that's kind of the basis of how we recognize the need in our patient for prescribing one of these.
You've just like covered all of the things I was going to ask you.
Sorry.
I'm so thorough, damn you. I was going to ask you about the TTM, like I had these little lists here, but then I tell you what, I could make a fortune, I reckon, selling my kids poo for transplants, because they, you know, I had like the best pregnancy with them. I had a water home birth. They've never had medication in their life. They have like the best poos every day. I really, as you're saying this, like my entrepreneurial brain is going, I can make money out of their poo. But I tell you what, there's so many people, and it always surprises me, that find it really icky or weird to talk about poo. And maybe because we're homeopaths, but I love talking about poo. It's so important. And a good poo is highly underrated. You know, it just sets you up for the day. And I'm always shocked when people, when I ask people, you know, what are your bowels like? And they say good. And I always ask, do you go every day? Because everyone's definition is so incredibly different.
Yeah, absolutely. When people say normal, you always have to say, what's normal for you? And you know, that whole idea, again, of the name of the large intestine, the great eliminator, commonly known as the bin man. And I always say, you know, this is the bin man. He collects the rubbish and he takes it away. If we, sometimes it happens, our bin men go on strike. If our bin men go on strike for a long time, it's horrible. First of all, you get foul smells emanating. And I always say to people, you know, stools shouldn't smell of roses, but neither should you have to send a canary in before it's safe for somebody else, or open every window in the house. So that's what happens when the rubbish builds up in the street. You get foul smells. You get infestation. You know, you'll get creatures. You'll get disease in the community. So it's the same. Is it really important that our bin man does his job and regularly takes out the trash so that our bodies don't get toxic? So absolutely, having a good poo, as you say. And, you know, as homeopaths, we're used to talking about it. And I often preface it when somebody is obviously a little bit, oh, yeah, normal. I say, I'm sorry to have to go a little bit deeper than that, but it is really important. Can I just ask you, like you do, you know, how often do you go every day? Do you go more than once a day? And just roughly, are your stools always the same consistency? And you know, they have them in the doctors,
the ritual chart.
The ritual stool chart. Sometimes it's quite good to have one of them in your office and just say, whip it out and say, Just pick one. Give me an idea. Is it always a bit loose and bitty? Is it always hard and difficult? Is it only every 3 days? Is it 3 times a day? It does matter. And it helps us in our choosing of which bowel nosod as well, to know what kind of stools they're having.
Well, there's something when you and I get to meet each other in person finally in Bali in September, when you're at the airport, in Denpasar Airport, go to the toilets there and check their toilets at the Denpasar Airport in Bali. They have a urine chart in there with color of the urine, which tells you whether you're dehydrated or not. And that just gave me the idea. And I wrote to the health department here in Australia, but I haven't heard anything back. I'm putting it out there to anybody, all our thousands of listeners in the world. Get in touch with your local councils or whatever. We need to have a Bristol stool chart and a urine chart on every school toilet and every public toilet in the world so that people can see what is a normal stool look like and what does normal urine look like, so that we teach our kids from a young age. This is so important. Your body's giving incredible clues of what's going on the inside, and we all need to know this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's an absolutely brilliant idea. And I think that would be a wonderful thing to for one of our health ministers to try and get behind and make that happen.
Well, when you get to the toilets in Bali, you'll see that. So do you mind if we go into maybe some of the maybe bigger bowel nodes or maybe little ones? I've got a whole bunch of questions for you afterwards about potency and aggravation, all that. But maybe if you just introduce our listeners to some of our very special friends.
Yeah, of course. Okay, so we'll start with Morgan. Without going into too much detail here, I'll go into more detail in the lecture. The main Morgan I use is Morgan Bach rather than Morgan Pure. There isn't very much difference in them, to be honest. The books would give you the impression that there is no difference, that they're the same called by a different name. And that's what I always thought. And I always used, it's just what I got sent. And so I always used Morgan Bach. And that's the remedy I got experience with. So it's the one I always use. And the picture is very, very similar. Might be a bit like using bacillinum instead of tuberculinum or tub instead of bacillinum. They're broadly the same, but they're not exactly the same. And by knowing the differences, it can be a little bit helpful. But anyway, the Morgan I mostly talk about is Morgan Bach. Now, the Morgan group of remedies, the word that we need to know about the Morgan group is congestion. That's the keynote. So what does congestion mean? When we talk about the roads are congested, it means there's no flow. We can't get through. The town's congested. It means we can't get in and out of shops easy. We can't get to where we want to go. So in the body, congestion in the bowel, no flow, no nothing getting through would mean constipation. So in the Morgan group, we're more likely to see an irregular, slightly drier stool, a tendency towards constipation, and maybe a little bit of toxicity backing up there. In the skin, congestion can mean poor lymph drainage. It can lead to more skin conditions. So Morgan Bach is my top remedy for skin conditions, especially eczema in babies. It's just wonderful for eczema in babies. Congestion in the nose will mean stuffed up, can't breathe, might be polyps, might be sinusitis, just means no flow of air through your nose. And likewise in the lungs, just maybe not good oxygen exchange and respiration. Things are a bit congested, could be bronchitis. It's a brilliant remedy for bronchitis. And they say that if you give a dose of Morgan Bach 200 in the winter, all the bronchitis that people normally get will vanish. But the main thing that I talk about it for is probably eczema. In babies in particular, I mean, in anybody, but in somebody maybe in their 20s or 30s who's got eczema, we're never going to get rid of it with one remedy. It's a process. It's going to take a little while. And Morgan Bach can be a big player. It can help to open the channels of elimination, and it can mean that remedies you choose afterwards will be less aggravating. It can be given at a time when they're slowly cutting their steroids down and mixing it with a more natural cream and just diluting it slowly, never stopping it cold, always diluting down. So it can be useful in anybody, but in babies, I have seen the most miraculous, honestly miraculous, babies and young children, because in babies in particular, if they have eczema, we don't have any, we can't ask them, what are the modalities? When are you most uncomfortable? They can't tell us. We can observe them a little, but often there's nothing really to go on. And as homeopaths, we can't say, what are you afraid of? What's your favorite food? You know, anything like that. We have some basic information. We do have, what are their poos like? But often babies come and I think, well, they could be quite a calky baby. Maybe calc carb will be useful, but I'm going to start them with some Morgan. And I start them with Morgan Bach. And when the parents come back, I don't even have to think what next, because it's gone. Seriously, it is so good.
I know.
I'm glad you do.
I have to tell you that I somehow used Morgan Pure when I first started. No, it wasn't. Because then I did your lecture and found that you use Morgan Bach. So I switched to Morgan Bach and then I got much better results. In fact, the Morgan Pure almost like killed my belief in bowel nose oats. And
oh, really?
It's weird. Okay. Yeah, I just never had good results with it. But once
Morgan Bach has a little bit more liver energy going on with it. So it is, as I say, slightly different, although you wouldn't really know that from a lot of the books. But Morgan Bach is my go-to for young kids with skin disorders. And as I say, I'm not saying you wouldn't also use it for, but it's just part of the picture. Whereas sometimes, if you're lucky in children, it's the whole picture. They've maybe things that can influence your microbiome. One is having a C-section or a vaginal birth, because we pick up our mother's microbiome as we pass through the birth canal. Whereas somebody who's born by C-section, their microbiome is measurably different for years, you know, up until they're maybe seven. You can see the differences in the microbiome of a baby that's born by C-section or a baby that's born vaginally. Secondly, whether they're bottle fed or breastfed, we pick up a lot of our mother's immune information through breast milk, and our microbiome is going to be measurably different, sometimes for our whole life, whether we're bottle fed or breastfed. So there are a number of things in babies that make a difference to how good their microbiome is going to be. Sometimes that's why babies may respond better. Maybe they've not been naturally delivered. Maybe they haven't been able to be breastfed. Maybe there's other reasons in the house, in the family diet and so on, that have made a difference to the baby's microbiome. But I can honestly say that Morgan Bach is a wonderful remedy. There are so many other things about it, but we haven't got time to go through the whole picture here. So just essentially to say that constipation, congestion generally, and eczema in kids, those are some of my big clues for Morgan Bach. Let's talk about Gärtner. Gärtner is another really interesting bowel nose oat. The keynote of Gärtner is kind of poor nutrition, poor assimilation. These babies are malnourished, or these children are malnourished, or these people, humans, are malnourished, not necessarily because they don't eat well, but they don't assimilate well. They don't seem to be able to absorb the goodness of food. They will have frequent stool. They'll have quite often a loose stool. And they may have what is known as a lienteric stool, where there's undigested food visible in the stool. We talked about the gut-brain connection. Often, if we're not processing fully, if we don't assimilate, we're not processing and assimilating in our brain either. So it's good for children who have ADHD, who are very restless, skinny, restless, quick, bright children who can't focus, who can't concentrate, who can't stay their attention on one subject. And they often have some processing difficulties. And when we see, as I say, that connection of not being able to process through our gut and not able to assimilate and utilize what we're taking in, we see exactly the same in the brain. And that's what Gärtner is good for. So poor absorption, skinniness, a bit like silica. The books say all brain and no brawn, no muscle, and seem to be clever, seem to be interested, quick, and there is an intelligence there, but sometimes it just doesn't stay in. You know that they're bright, but they somehow have got such butterfly minds that they don't seem to be able to properly assimilate it. So it's a wonderful remedy. It's also useful in end-stage cancers where people need every last bit of help they can get to try and assimilate and utilize their food, because the cancer cell's metabolic rate is using it up. People with problems metabolizing their food, we can use Gertner. They become very thin. They become cachexic. So it's a useful remedy for a number of things. And lastly, in children, it's a brilliant remedy for recurring ear infections in babies, especially when they're teething. It goes very well with silica in that situation. But lots and lots of uses for Gertner. It's a wonderful remedy.
I was actually going to ask you as well, because you know how you just linked the silica with a Gertner. Can you link one or two remedies for us with Morgan Bark and maybe the others as well? Just so that people, you know, like you said, you came upon Psycho because you gave Thuya wasn't working. You guys, that's a really nice way to remember it.
So Morgan, I always think of being a little bit more soric. Even the mood is often a little bit what I like to call Eeyore energy. You know, somebody that you say it was every day, they'll say, yeah, it might rain later. You know, just a little bit on the negative side. And, you know, the skin symptoms look very like sulfur, itching, worse in bed at night, you know, all of those kind of things. So we can look at some of our soric skin remedies and see some strong similarities. It will cover the similarities of the cracked skin like petroleum and graphites, the weeping like graphites, the itching worse from water and heat of the bed. So our soric skin remedies match really well to Morgan Bark. And silica and maybe phosphorus a little bit to Gertner. You know, they're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and lively and quite charming a lot of the time, but just prone to not being able to really focus their attention and skinny. So silica and phosphorus are maybe the ones we would link with Gertner. Disco. Disco is just the most wonderful remedy. So many things that we could say about disco. I'll start by linking it to the remedies because that maybe, as Eugenie says, that may be helpful. So it's kind of similar. I would say Gertner for a moment. It also, if we link Morgan with Serinum, we might link Gertner with Tub, the tall, skinny, flighty, need for entertainment type of child. So we might link Morgan with Serinum. We might link Gertner with Tuberculinum. So Disco, we're going to link with Lycopodium and other remedies that have anxiety of anticipation, like Arginate. And also I would link it more with Carcinosin, which is also a black type remedy for anxiety of anticipation, because that's one of the big things about it. They get into torment when they have something big happening, an exam, a wedding, maybe especially if they're giving a speech or something. It looks very like a podium in that way. They have a lot of ambition. They want to be A-stars. They want A-stars, and they will be pushing and pushing and pushing themselves to get an A-star. They have a fear of failure, not an abject failure like a podium. Like a podium's confidence is always like, oh, I'm going to fail. I'm going to get a D. I'm never going to get, you know, I'm never going to pass. I'll never get to where I want to be. Their fear of failure is abject. Whereas with Disco, it's, I don't want an A. I'll be really, really down if I get an A. The like a podium would be, yay, got an A. They want the A star. They might be children who are pushed a lot to get that A star. If they get an A, it might be, well, where did the other 10% go? Or even where did the other 2% go? Why did you not get 100%? So they may be being pushed by parents. And that again is very carcinogen. But equally, it could come from the perfectionist self, which is equally carcinogen-like. They are striving to prove themselves, to get good marks, and it causes them. They carry responsibility also, like if their parents want, you've got to get these marks because you've got to get into a good school. They don't want to let their parents down. They carry that responsibility. They take on that responsibility, again, a bit like carcinogen do. And they don't really like the responsibility, to be honest, but they feel it. They're sensitive to it. Sometimes, as I say, it's a bit imposed upon them. In the children on whom it's imposed, and maybe even on the children it isn't, that anxiety to perform, to get it right, is strong in them. And it often will come out physically as twitching and tics. I've noticed this particularly in boys between the age of 7 and 11, that they might, you know, have constant throat clearing, or actual ticking where they might have to screw their face up, or, you know, there's a lot of tic disorder in this remedy. There's a lot of restlessness. So that's just a little snapshot of DISCO. They tend to have loose bowels, especially with anticipation. DISCO is one of the ones we mentioned that can have heart. So there's lots of palpitations with anxiety and flushing and blushing. But yeah, that's DISCO in a very quick nutshell.
I've used that one often with Dientamoeba fragilis. The parasite seems to be rampant over here. But one of the things people will say is that they, you know, that this anticipation with finding the toilet, they will, you know, plan their day around where the toilet is. Yeah. And because it's that urgency and there's so much loose stool, and, you know, I can tell, and yeah, people often don't know, but they will have the similar symptoms. They will come and tell me the same thing. Smells like a sewage. They have to keep on wiping because, you know, because I'll ask them, how much toilet paper do you go through? And they'll say, I have to keep on wiping these loose stools. And sometimes they have shards, which, you know, a shit and a fart. You're not sure which one's going to be. And, but the main thing is they'll say they kind of plan their whole day around where the toilet is. And that alongside the nozo that's made from Dientamoeba fragilis and blasto and, you know, the polyparasitics, that bowel nozo particularly has been the key for me using alongside. Because I've done the parasite detox by itself, hasn't done anything, but then I include the bowel nozo with it and it really makes a difference.
Fantastic. That's really interesting to hear that link to the parasites. Certainly, we always link it. If I have a patient who says, I'm coming by train, is there a toilet on the way from the station if I were to walk? I think, here we go, DISCO patient coming in. Maybe not, but it's going to be a thought. Because that is, there is, we have an app in the UK that will tell you where your nearest usable toilet is. And I always say, people, download that. That will help you. And once you've had some remedies and your bowel is more secure and you're less anxious, that will all go away. And it does. Psychotic co. I mentioned the psychotic co because of that wonderful patient with the arthritis. It is a big remedy around joints and arthritis, although all the bowel nozodes have some joint stuff. It's not just psychotic co. But it's, the name suggests that it's linked with the psychotic miasm. So we'd link this with Medirhinum, the psychotic miasm, and Thuya, but particularly Thuya. When I very first got a computer, I ran a list of symptoms and it was eerie how close they were. So in psychotico, we'll expect some, maybe a history of benign overgrowth of tissue, whether it's molluscums, whether it's styes, whether it's warts, whether it's lipomas, we're going to see maybe a history of benign overgrowth of tissue with psychotic co, and we're going to have thought about Medirhinum or Thuya, perhaps. I link this with Thuya and I differentiate it because there are differentiations that can happen. They're both remedies with quite a low sense of self-esteem, and they often have not felt favored by their parents. So in Thuya, very often a sibling they felt was more loved, and it's made them feel unlovable, and they go through life presenting a mask to the world. If I don't show who I really am, you might love me. If I show who I really am, you might hate me. But, you know, if my own parents didn't really love me, there must be something wrong with me. That's the Thuya way. Similar but slightly different is the psychotic is a brother or a sister was more loved because of their talent. Maybe I say this because this was one of the cases I had. Mother had been a concert pianist and one brother was a very talented pianist. So he got all the attention, the teaching, the extra lessons. He was the boy with the educated fingers, according to the brother. And it felt like it didn't matter what they did. Oh, I got an A star today. Go and do your piano lesson. You know, it felt like they were ignored. Luke Klein has a really nice word for this. He says, fear of obscurity. What is obscurity? It's like being eclipsed, like suddenly your light is hidden by somebody standing in front of you. And in their case, it's the sibling who has got the skills. So they spend their life trying to get skills, trying to be the best runner, trying to be the best at something else. Now will you look at me? Olympic gold, mum. Now will you look at me? So they feel ignored. It's not so much unloved, although there's an element of that in it. There's an underlying, I'm not good enough, that in both of these remedies. But with psychotic co, they'll often be trying to prove themselves in a very visible arena. That's one of the things that we can see. Because it's like Thuya, And because it's like Medrine, and we're going to see similar physical issues, and fungal stuff is a big remedy for fungal stuff and mucus, a lot of inflammation in mucous membranes. So that's another of the things that we're going to see with it. But they are just such wonderful, wonderful remedies. I really love them. And what I love is that people who have done my courses also say, oh my God, I just love these remedies. And like you said, you know, they make such a difference because you might be following them with the constitutional remedy. And often that's a remedy that we've said links in with the bowel noso, not always, but often. And we might still be needing miasmatic. We might still be needing something constitutional. We might still be needing something on that sort of lesional layer. But it just does such a lot of the background work. And it just seems to make our remedies more accessible to the body. It just seems to, I don't know, they're just wonderful.
Can I just say, Psycho has, I have literally lost count of how many of my clients that has helped with Candida. And, you know, some women during pregnancy, their bowel flora changes and they have such horrific Candida issues, just so much thrush, and it's just painful and itchy, and they have a horrible time. And I love when I can give them Psycho during pregnancy to clear that picture so that then when they give birth, they're not transferring that to their child. And it is like, I'm getting goosebumps. It makes such a difference. And so quickly, I had a client just last week again, you know, with Candida, green discharge, unbelievably smelly. She's so self-conscious of it. It's been going on for months. You know, she's really bad with her follow-up. So it's probably 6 months since I've seen her. And, you know, a few doses of Psycho. And like, you know, literally 3 days later, she's like, Eugenie, the itching and the pain and the discharge is like 80% reduced.
Yeah, I just love them. And I'm glad that you're finding that because they are just so brilliant. And just you saying Psycho there, I had a very funny, one of my patients, I gave her psychotic codes. She had lots of physical problems, but she also emotionally, she was feeling a bit like, you know, she was saying she didn't feel balanced in her head and everything. And she was getting quite angry and sulky with her husband and everything. And I said, I'm going to give you this remedy first. I said, it's called psychotic code. And, you know, and when she came back, she said, I loved that remedy. She said, and so did my husband. And my husband said to me, I can see why she gave you a remedy called psychotic cow. I didn't give it because you're a psychotic cow. I said, it's psycho. The word comes from fig. It's Greek for a fig, psychos. I said, so the origins of the word are from a fig. Not because I said, and the co stands for compound. So it's psychotic compound, nothing to do with psychosis or you being a cow.
I have often said, I wish we can just rebrand that remedy because every time I tell somebody I'm giving them Psycho, like I just feel like I need to explain myself.
Yeah,
we need to rebrand it.
I always say, not Psycho with a P. It is funny. But the last remedy we'll talk about is Proteus, another of our big remedies. And Proteus, we would link it with Ignatia and maybe Nux Vomica. One of the big things about Ignatia, one of the things you'll read in any of the books is what they call brainstorm. It's a very emotional remedy. And they can be, the word hysterical, we link that with Ignatia. And what hysterical means really is your reaction is out of proportion to the situation. The situation might have called for mild irritation and fixing it. And you have gone into a blind fury about something small. It seems that they go straight from zero to fury without stopping, without passing go, just straight there. They will throw things. They'll, you know, if they can't get their buttons undone on their shirt, they'll pull it off and the buttons will pop everywhere. Similar to Nux Vomica, also in some ways, just impatient. One of the things that Proteus like is things done their way. And they like things done their way. That's the way that they were taught to do it. That's the correct way. Robert Bridge had a lovely case of Proteus in one of the book about a little boy who exemplified this, that, you know, that's not how you make tea. Well, I have to say I'm a bit fussy about how tea is made because I'm British and we make tea a particular way, you know. Put the tea bag in and then the water and then you let it brew. It has to be hot water. And then you take the, if you're using a bag, which you preferably loose tea, and then add a little milk to taste. Anyway, but so it's maybe not the best example, but if you were taught to do it this way, that's the way it's done. So they get very much into a routine. It's also good for children with autism who need repetition, who need routine. I will say that if you are putting your child's shoes on and you always put the right shoe on and then the left shoe, and one moment in a hurry you forget and you put the left shoe on first, you'll probably get a kick in the head because they'll go, no, not that one. You know, You do something different that very quickly rise to anger and stress. Stress levels are just below the surface and they like routine and they like things done the way they do them. Physically, they have a tendency to spasms. It could be hiccups, for instance. It could be migraines, which is spasms of a blood vessel. Could be Raynaud's. But the remedies we would link it to would be remedies like Ignatia and Nux. Great for toddler temper tantrums when chamomilla doesn't touch it, tub skims off the top. You know, those children's temper tantrums who will very quickly, if they're not getting their own way in anything, will go into an absolute meltdown. They may have bowel spasms, painful abdominal cramps with stool. So that's a quick run through of our five biggest, not all of the bowel nosodes. There are quite a few smaller ones. You know, we've got Morgan-Gartner, we've got Bacillus number 7, Bacillus number 10. We've got even Colibacillinum. We've got a few other remedies, but we haven't got time for them all. But that's the five big ones, a little introduction into why we should think of one, and if we think of one, which one might be best.
And for anyone listening, Hilary is not even scratching the surface. She's just like with a little duster over the top scratching. Can I just say that the amount of my patients, I really should go and sit down and count the cases that you have helped because of this knowledge that you've shared with Proteus and also your endocrine lecture, learning about hypothalamus. I have so often used Proteus and hypothalamus together for children with seizures. And I cannot tell you how life-changing it has been.
Fantastic.
And that is actually completely cured it in some of the clients.
Fantastic.
It's just the most satisfying thing.
You know, it's why we become homeopaths. We want to help people. And one of the nice things about being a teacher is that you can help people beyond your own clinic. You can help other people to help more people. And that's lovely. It's always lovely to hear when people have used these remedies and started to get great results with them. That's why we do it. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, I have to tell you, the lovely Ton Jansen has got a huge following worldwide now. And it's just, I'm so loving the work that he does. It's really amazing. And he's obviously a big fan of the Polybowel. And then, you know, in more recent years, we've had Polybowel Plus, which is all the bowel nosos plus candida plus digestive enzymes. Have you got any thoughts on Polybowel Plus? And why would somebody use a singular bowel noso as opposed to just like Polybowel Plus?
For me, it's more elegant. I know that sounds like a funny word to use, but you know, don't get me wrong, I'm a fan of Ton Jansen and what he does, and I think there's a lot of value there. And I'm not saying to anybody, I never say to anyone, you shouldn't do that, because I think we all develop our own way of practicing. I'm very kind of inclusive in that way. I don't think anyone, oh, you should do it this way, this is the classical way, or, oh, no, you should do it this way, this is the way that you do it, this is, oh, it's only the kingdoms at work. It's, you know, I think these are always into helping our patients, and I'm very happy for anyone who utilizes any of them. For me personally, I like the clarity of looking for the bowel nosode that matches them. And I think it's probably, I don't know, maybe it doesn't matter, Eugenie. I don't know whether it matters or not. My feeling is that maybe it matters a bit that you're giving the body not a mixed message, not a lot of things to be, but something that it can take and use. So I use them individually. I've never used Polybowel, but as I say, I'm not criticizing. I'm sure people get great results with it, and that's marvelous. And I'm not saying I don't mix remedies. I do. I quite like little remedy combinations. There are some combinations that I find elegant. They plug the gaps of the one remedy. The little gaps are plugged by another. I'm not so sure that's the case with the bowel nosodes because they have such an individual energy. So I like to do the detective work and find out which one is most likely. You know, if people are using Polybowel and getting results, who am I to say it's not good or don't do it? I'm not saying that at all. All I'm saying is that I personally don't use it.
I have to say that, you know, I have listened to, I'm pretty sure most of your lectures that's out there. I'm your self-confessed biggest fan. And actually, you know, the real reason behind me organizing this Bali lecture is just so that I can finally get to the Bali conference, so I can finally meet you in person. That's the real reason behind it all. And one thing is that you are so inclusive of different ways of doing that. So nobody that knows you would ever for one second think that you would criticize somebody else's way of prescribing, because you are so inclusive. And that's what I want for our homeopathic community, because we are so quick to tear each other down. But I've never had that from you. You've always in all your lectures said, you know, oh, that's you, try that, do that. In Q&A sessions afterwards, people will ask you your opinion, and you are always like, just do what works for you. And, you know, you are always teaching from your experience and always so open
that's
to other people.
That's all we can do, isn't it? All we can do is teach from our experience. And I can't tell you anything about Polly Bowell in particular, because it's not in my experience, not because I don't think it's good, but I can't add anything because I've never used it. So I don't have any cases I can share. I don't have any particular experience. I'm certainly not saying don't do it. I'm just saying I don't do it. And the reason I don't do it is I like the process. Mm. I like clarity and the cleanness of it. But that's just me.
I'll add my tiny little bit of experience in, because I love the bell nose so much.
Right.
That I originally started off with Polybell before I did your lecture. So we're talking maybe 2018, maybe start 2019. And I didn't have that much results with it. And then 2019, I did your lecture. And then I've only used the single bell nose. Then the last couple of years, I've been playing with Polybell. And where I do find it good is when somebody has been on a course of antibiotics, or there's just so much going on and I can't even see which individual nose they need. And especially if they are on antibiotics at the moment, I'll give them the poly antibiotic remedy and the Polybell Plus together, just to kind of get their bowel flora better and get a new fresh symptom picture. And then I'll prescribe an individual after that. So I found it good in that sort of way, just specifically if there's like just a lot going on with the gut. But I know Morgan Bark itself is also good for use after antibiotics.
And Psychotico, especially if it's penicillin based, because it's fungal background. So Psychotico is very good if you've had penicillins. Morgan's very good when you've had other sulfonamides particularly. But yeah, do you know, here on my desk, I've got a huge big bottle of polycontraceptive
awesome.
From John Janssen. So I'm not at all averse to these things, but where I feel I've got a lot of information about it that I can use, as in the bowel nosodes, I like to use it. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like you get really good results with it, and I love to hear that. And I'm certainly not saying don't do it, not at all.
Well, you know that all our listeners are going to scream out in all your lectures. I know you get asked about potency, you know, posology. So just tell us about your favorite potencies for the remedies and how often you would prescribe it, because it's the first thing, no matter what lecture you do, people will always ask you about potency.
And people ask this, and I think people just get a little bit too caught up in potencies. Mm. One, we can only make that decision based on some information we have. We can't know that it's absolutely the right one for a person. If it's very physical, you know, if it's skin, bowel, if it's a very physical thing, quite often I'm going to start lower, maybe 6 or 30. I have to say probably 30 is the commonest place I would start with a bowel nosode. But if it's very like real high temper tantrums, I might immediately start with a 200 or go higher. So all we can do is try and match the energy. Is it a high energy case, in which case we can go higher? Is it a low energy case, in which case we should probably stay a bit lower? Is it a physical case, in which case we might stay lower, or a mental case, in which case we might go higher? Those are the two ways that we can decide. We can always go up, and contrary to what some people think, we can always come down. You know, there are no don'ts. There just aren't. There's lots of schools of thought. That's one way of working back from the mentals to the physicals, and the way that probably most do, which is moving up. So we can always move and change. It's not set in stone if one doesn't work. But quite often people say, how long do you do it for? Now, this has become a bit of people say Hillary does this as if it were protocol. I don't have protocols. I don't particularly like protocols because they don't account for individuality if you're doing a protocol. So I like to say it's not a protocol. It's not what I always do. It's what I mostly do. And it's what I mostly do because I found over the years that 21 days seems to be quite an optimum number for getting the bowel flora to change and stay changed. A bit like if you stop an antibiotic too soon, the bacteria re-establish. That's the medical theory, at least. Feels to me a little bit maybe like that. We're trying to change the bacterial balance, and if we don't really get it fully established, the bad guys will grow again. We need to get them strong enough that they're going to keep the bad guys vanquished. So it seems to me that 21 days is quite optimum for that. So 21 days is my starting point. But I'll always say to people, if you have anything to report to me, you know, I might say to you, keep going for the 21 days. I might say, stop and let's wait if you report back to me. So if patients are going to report back to me an aggravation, rarely happens. Honestly, hardly ever see aggravations of
my
the bowel
next
nose.
Question.
Really rare. Really, really rare. I might say, okay, that's good. Shows it's working, that something's happening. Let's just wait now and see how you're feeling in another week and we'll take it from there. So it's not a protocol. It's not what I always absolutely do. But if everything's going smoothly, there's no big, big shifts, I'll allow them to use that 21 days. And then I usually wait another 21 days before I do anything else. I find that the bowel nosodes work better, work more in the space between. You know, once the bacteria is fully established, then it can start to make the changes. So this is something that I try to teach quite a lot, is don't hurry. Don't hurry. You can't hurry healing. Healing is a process. It's like I would say, if you cut your arm, you can't take a remedy and it be healed overnight, because it's got to process. It has to form granulations, then it has to heal over, then it scabs, then the scab will come off. That is healing. So with remedies, we can only make sure it heals without getting infected, and it heals as quickly as your body can heal it. But the process has to happen. Mm-hmm. So we have to allow that, and we have to give our patients information that tell them it's going to take a while. You're not going to have a remedy and bang, it's all gone. It's a process of healing, and we're going to take you on that journey and we're going to get rid of your eczema, but it might take a little while. There's no big hurry. We need to make sure. When I do supervision and I look at cases and I say to people, you know, you had the remedy. I think that was the remedy. It was the first remedy you chose. You did a brilliant job. And then you left it and you've never got back to where you should be ever since, because you were too hurried or too pressured by the patient. I talk about that in my eczema lectures. You know, don't let the patient run the show. You're the homeopath. You're the one that knows. So wait, don't be in a hurry to give another remedy. Let it pass through. You'll be surprised. Patients say, if I had seen you 3 weeks ago, I wouldn't be saying this. But now it's brilliant. So be patient. That would be my other thing. If I do a 30 for 21 days and I get good results, I usually will. The information we're given is don't repeat them too soon. I have sometimes gone against that information and repeated it. But by and large, I probably go with that more than I don't. I wait. And then if I want to repeat it, I might go to a 200 and I might do the 200 for 14 days and so on. And then I might do the 1M for 7 days. Always getting people to feedback to me how they are. But there's no, as I say, there's no rights and wrongs. You can adapt it to your style of practice, see what results you're getting. But do get to know these remedies, because they are just wonderful.
They really are. I was going to echo the same about the aggravations. I am trying to think of a time I've had an aggravation. And I mean, I've had probably thousands of prescriptions of it now. And okay, I'll say maybe I've had one or two, because I can't actually remember any, but I'm sure there has been one or two, but they are really so gentle.
Yeah, they are very gentle. And, you know, I think that I also like with students to try and encourage them not to feel fear. I think when we put fear in with a remedy, we're more likely to get an aggravation. I leave my patients with the message, you're going to love this remedy. I think this is going to be a brilliant remedy for you. And I say that because I truly believe it, you know, and that I don't see aggravations very often. And aggravations are only your body sorting out. I say, if you're tidying a room, you're pulling things out, sometimes the room's going to look worse for a while until you've sorted it and made it how you want it. And that's what an aggravation is. So I don't worry about them either. I just let them work through and encourage people that it's okay. This is, you know, part of the process. So I don't have anxiety when I prescribe, and therefore I think that's part of it. I rarely see aggravation. So I always give it with a positive, you're going to love this remedy. And most people do.
Love it. Hilary, can you please tell us about your amazing series of lectures? And I know you're trying to kind of retire, but it's a little bit hard because everyone wants a piece of you. And you're sailing around the world and on wonderful adventures. I love seeing your Facebook photos and spending time with your delicious little grandson.
He's so adorable.
He's really adorable. So tell us just a little bit about what are you up to? Because, you know, your daughter Emily is taking on your cases. We briefly mentioned that 2 years ago in that episode, but, you know, she's there. You've got your series of lectures you're going to be doing. So what's the next chapter for you?
So I'm not retiring fully. I'm slowing down my clinic because there's other things that I want to be doing. I actually have 3 brilliant homeopaths coming in to my clinic to take some of my caseload because I've got my daughter, Emily. She's not been qualified that long, but she just gets it. She's really, really good practitioner. I've got Elspeth, who is also a great practitioner, and Nafia Reggiani, and they're coming in and helping me with my caseload to free me up a little bit. I'm not retiring fully, and I'm going to be doing more writing and more teaching. That's one of the things that will be nice to have some more time to do. If you're not already on my webinar mailing list, Eugenie will give you my email address. It's just my name, Hilary Dorian. Hilary's got an E in it, HilaryDorian@AOL.com. And if you email me, I'll put you on my mailing list. I don't mail out very often, so you're not going to be overwhelmed by emails. I will only email you when there's a lecture coming out, no other time. And on the email will be the links to register for the lecture and all the available lectures that I have, backdating that you can purchase. And there are 5, actually 6 now, free ones. I like doing all the nosodes, miasmatic nosodes free. So on there are my pictures of Medirhinum, Cephalinum, Carcinosin, and so on. And they're all free. And if you email me, you can have access to those. And I'll put you on my mailing list for any other of the lectures that I'm going to do. And I'm working on, as I say, I'm going to do the bowel nosodes again later on this autumn, because there seems to be a lot of people who haven't done it with me. And I have enlarged upon it. And I'm going to do 2 days, one for the big 5, if you like, and one for the smaller ones, just to enlarge a little bit more about them, because they are also wonderful remedies. And then next year, I'm going to do a lecture on the kingdoms and my favorite remedies. There's probably going to be a series of 10, like butterflies and my favorite remedy, birds and my favorite remedies, gems and my favorite remedies, fungus and my favorite remedy. So a little look at some of those is also what's coming up. So yeah, I'm excited to be doing a bit more writing, and I can't retire fully because I can't leave homeopathy because I love it so much. It's not what I do, it's who I am, you know, and I'll always be there with my toe in the water.
I feel exactly the same way. And so for our listeners, that's HilaryDorian@AOL.com. And we'll have it in the show notes for sure. Hilary, I just also have to say, I really enjoyed the Master Practitioner course that you put on last year with CHE. It was such a privilege to get to spend that, you know, 10 months with you. Unfortunately, I didn't get to watch many live ones because it was 1 till 4 a.m. Yes. Our time, but I was 2 of them, but I was a write-off the next day. I couldn't do anything. So I watched the recorded lectures. There was such a privilege, and you touched the lives of so many homeopaths, and just you passing that baton of all of your knowledge onto us was just the most amazing thing. And I'm so grateful to Marcus for like twisting your arm to let you do it. And I'm really loving the one with Colin Griffith at the moment as well. And it's really
amazing. There's so much knowledge out there, isn't there, that we have to try and absorb and utilize.
So much. And I love that you're taking the time to share that with us, because really, you know, you've got 4 decades of experience. There's so much that we can learn from you. And I just appreciate you passing that on, because it does take a lot of time, like preparing a lecture. It takes so much time to put that together. You know, a 1-hour lecture probably takes, I don't know, a couple of 100 hours or whatever.
It does take time. Because what you want is to make sure that you have clarity. That's what I always try to do, to make things as clear as possible and as logical sequentially, and that people can easily understand and utilize and start using immediately. That's important. And yeah, it takes a little bit of time to get there, but I enjoy the process and it's good for me too. So yeah.
That is what I love about your lectures. I can watch a lecture in the morning, and that afternoon I can give that I can prescribe the remedy that afternoon based on the knowledge that you've given me. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Hilary, is there any final message that you want to leave our listeners with?
Just, you know, get to know these wonderful remedies and use them. They are life-changing and I can't praise them highly enough. They have made a huge difference in my practice. Eugenie tells us the same. They're going to make a huge difference in your practice when you get to know them. So, yeah, that's all.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Hilary. I'll see you September in Bali.
Thank you, Judy. I'm looking forward to meeting you too. Have a big hug.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.